Sairam, in a warm, really warm good morning to all of you. Every day in Prashanthi is making us wonder, can a day get warmer than this? And the next day seems to be saying, hey, here I am. So from a really hot but beautiful as always, Prashanthi Nilayam, greetings and welcome to Radio Sai Answering Booth. This is Prem, your friend from Team Radio Sai, and the one who mans this booth every Thursday. So here I am for another episode. Do I have a question and an answer for it? Yes. Are we going to continue with explanations of that absolutely fascinating Telugu song written by Swami? Most certainly. But are we going to have a quote before all of that? Yes, of course. So without much ado, let us begin by offering our most loving pranams at Swami's lotus feet and head to the quote of this week. The quote that I'm sharing with you today, like all others I've shared before, is one that I found quite interesting. And the thing about these quotes is, they speak of the same core principles that we all are meant to follow, but are expressed in very beautiful words. And today's quote too is one such profound thought in beautiful words. And it is by an American writer, James Truslow Adams. I quote, "There is so much good in the worst of us and so much bad in the best of us that it hardly behooves any of us to find fault with the rest of us." End of quote. Well, that's an interesting quote, isn't it? The idea that there is good in even the worst amongst us and those whom we condemn as bad, and there are flaws in those whom we praise as the best among us, is something that Swami has spoken about extensively, isn't it? Swami would say, in the past, you guys, there were clearly good and bad people. So avatars like Rama and Krishna came to protect the good and destroy the bad. But in today's world, there is good and bad in each individual. That's why the avatar has to change the approach. Now he has come to foster goodness and destroy the evil within. This idea that there is good even in the worst of us is really that which gives us hope, isn't it? In dealing with ourselves and in dealing with others. This belief is important for all of us, parents, teachers, because the moment we start labeling people as good and bad, we put them in separate containers and start dealing with them accordingly. Just imagine, how many people are there who have led completely good, normal lives and may have just lost their composure for one moment and have ended up doing a crime? We then label them as criminals or murderers and begin treating them as such for the rest of their lives. If one moment of evil can define a person, why is it that millions of moments of goodness doesn't define that same person? I'm not saying we must all become tolerant to crime. I'm only saying we must never give up our hope in the inherent goodness of each person. In fact, Swami says the Shuddha Sattva, or the pure goodness, is present within each person, and that goodness is divinity itself. It exists even in the worst of us. And coming to the point that there is enough bad in the best of us, I'm sure we all know it. And this is something we must remember for ourselves. Only then will we strive constantly to become better and better. And this will also help us focus only on Swami and not on others who appear as heroes to us. You know, sometimes we are so lost in hero worship of devotees of Swami that their words become more important than the words of Swami itself. You know, once a devotee whom I was talking to told me in some context, you know, but a Swami student himself told me this. And she was saying something absolutely contrary to what Swami would say. So I told her, a Sai student's words gets validity because he is associated with Swami. Now you're taking his words and judging Swami's words. Now isn't that a bit odd? So the point is, even the best of us is not infallible. The best devotee, the best student as they appear to us, can also have flaws. In an individual level, that must lead us to constant introspection, and in relationship to others, it must express as constant vigilance and not giving anyone more importance than Swami's words or the voice of our own conscience. But the whole idea of that quote is, there is enough good and bad in each one of us to keep us occupied for a lifetime or more. So just don't bother commenting about, labeling or categorizing others. So before we move on, dear listeners, let me read the words of James Truslow Adams one more time. I quote, "There is so much good in the worst of us and so much bad in the best of us that it hardly behooves any of us to find fault with the rest of us." now to move on to the question of the week. Last week I had played a question from Mr. Danny Nowak. He's from the United States, a professor of mathematics. He sent me two questions, and I'm going to play for you the question that he sent, the second question that he sent along. And it's probably quite interesting that I picked up the quote I did for this week, because Mr. Danny, as I had mentioned last week, we have a CRISPR Divinity conversation with him on the radio. He is one of those people in the United States who are involved with trying to interact with prisoners with the same very thought that there is goodness even in the worst of us. And if given a second chance, if the message of Swami can be taken to them, you never know. You know, they might themselves become agents of change. And that's what he says in that conversation that we had with him. And so glad to have a question, the second question from Mr. Danny. And he's always, as last week, he's been kind to send the question in his own voice. So we'll listen to the question first, and then we'll proceed to answer him.
Hi, Prem. This is my question. I'm married for many years, and I love my wife dearly. Swami got into my life many years ago, maybe 20 years ago, and in a dream, and started working on my subconscious mind, you know, all the fears that I had. I won't go into the details. To make a long story short, I became a Swami devotee, and I came to Prashanti Nilayam, and there were small incidents where Swami actually talked to me. One time he talked to me. However, my wife is Jewish, as me too, and in the Jewish tradition you don't have a form to a God. The God is formless. Now, for me, Swami, to tell you the truth, is like, it's God, you know, because it's the universal energy, it's the infinite, it's everywhere. It has a form. But my wife has hard time to accept it. And I'm not trying to push her at all. But now it came to a point where one of the devotees in our center offered me a big picture of Swami. And I want to put it on the wall in my meditation room. And my wife doesn't want it. So I'm not sure how to handle it and how to handle the general question when one person in a marriage is a devotee and the other one isn't. There are probably millions of people like that in the world. I would appreciate if you can elaborate on this question even beyond my narrow example. Thank you. Thank you, Prem.
Thank you, Mr. Danny, for that interesting question. Yes, I think, isn't that a situation that many of us face, especially those who get married into families which probably are not devoted to Swami the same way, or like in this case, where the concept of worshipping and the concept of God itself is so different. But you ended by saying that it would be nice if I can answer it in a more general way. I'll start off with a very, very general way. You're, of course, talking about all such marriages. But the home itself is a sample of what happens in the community or in the society, right? So in that sense, to start off with, what I'd like to say is our concept of God being different from the concept of God of others should never be the cause of disharmony in any case. The reason is the very idea of religion, the very idea of devotion, knowing God or worshipping God, the basic common minimum that this process is meant to achieve. Yes, we all are meant to progress spiritually. We all are, you know, in the Indian tradition, they say that the cycle of life and birth has to come to an end. All of that is variable based on the different religious beliefs and different approaches. But if there is any common minimum which each religion, each approach is meant to achieve, it is to make each one of us better human beings, right? So that is the whole idea. And when we say better human beings, it should make us better at living in a society without hurting others, without being hurt and harmed by others, right? So that is the whole idea. So if the disharmony around us is based upon the very fact that my concept of God is different from your concept of God, then there's something seriously wrong in the approach itself. So in any case, there should never be a reason of disharmony. Our concept of God, our belief in God, our approach to spirituality should never be a cause for disharmony in the community, in the society, in our workplace, or for that matter, within our homes or within our marriages too. So to start with, I'd like to give 3 points that we must keep in mind so that this disharmony doesn't come, you know, in any of these cases that I just mentioned. First of all, I think what's more important is we need to acknowledge that each person has a unique approach, especially when it comes to God. And this is what makes spirituality a path of solitude, right? Well, I'll make a reference to this point later in the answer too. But this is a very, very important thing, just to acknowledge this fact that each one of us is different and our approach to God is definitely going to be different. And Swami would often say this, you know, in the Vedas there is this reference to 33 crore gods, right? And we tend to think that these are the pantheon of gods that the Hindus worship. But Swami would point out that when the Vedas were in vogue, when they were being taught, the population of the earth was so small, it was in a few crores. And the idea of saying that there were so many 100 crores or 33 crores or whatever it was, number of gods, the idea that the sages and seers were trying to give to us is that there is a God for each one of us. The way I see God can never be the same as the way, even if I have a twin brother, the way he would see God, right? So it all starts with this acknowledgement of the fact that each one of us have a completely unique approach, especially when it comes to God. And there is this beautiful quote I remember reading a long time ago. Believe that you are unique. Never forget that you are completely unique. And also remember that you're only as unique as every other individual in this world. So to start with, this acknowledging this fact that each one of our approaches are different is very, very important. You can't force others to acknowledge that. To start with, we can at least acknowledge that, right? The second one is, for us to be able to follow and worship God the way we want, you know, we must not have the need to convince another person. We can always share our thoughts, you know, that is something which we always should, because our concepts evolve when we share it with others, when others share their point of view, and that's how our thinking in every matter evolves, and that's the same with, in the case of devotion, in the case of our approach to spirituality too. But this fact that for me to be able to follow my faith, for me to be able to stick on to my concept of divinity, I should be able to convince another person. I think that approach is a cause of a lot of confusion, you know, be it institutionally or as an individual. There should never be the need for me to convince another person that the way I am seeing God is the right approach for him to or her to. And that's the most dangerous thing. In fact, we were once talking to a person from a huge media house, and he was saying that, I mean, they go around making documentaries on different types of people and different types of institutions in the world. He was saying that there are some churches in some countries in Europe or in some of these Scandinavian countries where the following for that particular sect of Christianity in that particular church, it's a very, very small number. It might be like something like 50 or 60 or something like that. And they never find the need to talk about it to another person or to induct new people into that people. They say that this is our faith and we are happy having it and practicing it. We don't even find the need to tell it to another person and convince another person that what we're doing is right. So for us to follow and worship the God the way we want, to approach God the way we want, we should not find the need to convince another person. And of course, let me make it clear that I'm just making these general points. It's not that you're doing it, Mr. Danny, or these are direct instructions to you. These are very general points. And the third thing, which is in a way corollary to what I just mentioned, is that we should never try to put down another's approach to God, right? To be condescending in a manner, we deride another person's approach, say that this is wrong, to worship God in a form is wrong, or to worship God as formless is wrong, or to worship God as someone who is anything which that person thinks. It's always right to reason with them. It's always right to share, as I said, our points of view. That's a different thing. But most of the problem, especially within the family, within friends, within marriage, the moment we start talking of our approach or our faith as superior to the other person's in a condescending manner, I think that's when it brings in disharmony. So in any case, be it in the community, be it in the family, these are three points I feel we should remember. Probably you can make it four. The first point, which is the most important, the idea of God, devotion, religion, all of this is meant to bring harmony in society, so it can never be the cause for disharmony. It's meant to make us better human beings, which means make us better at living in a society. And the second point is, acknowledge that each person's approach will be different. The moment you acknowledge that each one is unique, the acceptance of other person's unique approach will automatically slowly start seeping in. The third point, for us to follow and worship God, we should not find the need to convince another person. And the third point is, never speak condescendingly about another's faith or another's approach to God. Right? And we know that all the religious, communal, sectarian disharmony that we see in the world today is because of this. It's because of we're not seeing the purpose of religion, we're not seeing the purpose of devotion itself. And if we can remember these three or four points that I mentioned, I think we will at least not go astray in that manner. Now, coming to the point of, I am not the problem, the other's intolerance is the problem, right? Most often that happens. I am calm and peaceful, but the other person doesn't seem to be having the same peaceful approach to the confusion. Well, to start with, as much as possible, the attempt must be to be patient and to be accommodative. We cannot ensure that the other person does that, but it is our duty to do that first. And in this context, I just recall whatever Swami would say, especially to his girl students, the students of the Anantapur campus. Swami would invariably give them, in the earlier years, would give them an interview when they're graduating, and Swami would tell them this, you're all going out into the world, tomorrow you all will get married, and there is a chance that you will get married into a family that is not devoted to Swami. And Swami would always tell them that, it's all right, don't worry about that. There's nothing, the skies are not going to fall down. You always have Swami in your heart. Do whatever duty you're doing and bring a good name for Swami wherever you are and offer whatever you do to Swami. Things will eventually change. And there are hundreds and hundreds of students who can vouch for this fact that they all get married into families which are unintroduced to Swami. Eventually, it's through their nature, through their behavior, they draw the entire family to Swami, right? Or Swami will have ways of stepping in. So Swami would never tell them that fight for the right to come to Patti, or you have to put a picture of Swami in the altar and show strong resistance when it comes to matters of bhajans or going for seva, things like that. Swami would never say that. The first approach is always to be patient, to be calm, to be tolerant. So that is one thing which will work even in this scenario based on the question that's been asked. But at the same time, it also reminds me of another discourse which I heard, a very interesting one. I think a discourse which Swami delivered in the year 97 during one of the world conferences or the youth conferences, where Swami said there are some people who come to Parthi and their colleagues would ask them or their friends would ask them, where are you going? And they would say, oh, I'm going to Bangalore, right? I'm going to visit a friend. Swami say, why are you ashamed to say that you're going to Puttaparthi? Why are you ashamed to say that I worship this form of divinity? And that is again another thing that I think we should all keep in mind, that our diffidence of expressing our devotion should never stem out of embarrassment, right? We should never feel that, oh, what will happen if somebody else comes to know or looks at me as Swami's devotee? That should not be the cause of our, having patiently or doing our worship silently behind doors. That should not be the cause. So as Swami would say, be proud, be firm in saying that, yes, I'm a devotee of, be it Swami. And Swami would even say this when it comes to a debate between theists and atheists. Swami would say, if somebody comes and tells you that I don't believe in God, Swami would tell, fine, that's your belief. But I believe in God and God exists for me. And Swami would say, never hesitate to say that. Never dilly-dally about that. So there are some things where we have to be firm, but at the same time, the idea is not to create disharmony wherever we are, whether it is in our workplace, whether it is in our family or elsewhere, right? So in a home, in a marriage, as much as possible, our belief in a certain concept or even our belief in Swami should never become the cause of such disharmony. That should be the topmost point. So one, in the sacrificing one's desires to do a certain form of worship or the sake of harmony at home, to an extent, is actually admirable according to what Swami has said. But at the same time, we should ensure that that diffidence or that secret relationship with Swami should not stem out of our embarrassment to talk about it, right? Well, having said all that, let me come back to the point that I mentioned right in the beginning. Spirituality is an individual journey at the end of the day. You know, we might speak of marriages where it looks like it's a match made in heaven. We might speak of best friends who share everything through their childhood. Or you can even talk of twins or very, very close siblings or whatever it is. But the path of spirituality has to be walked alone. That is something we should never forget. And, you know, Swami would say this. The dharma of a son or the duty of a son is to obey the father. The dharma of a husband and wife is probably to accommodate each other and even to, you know, listen to each other's desires to an extent. But even these are what we call achara dharma. I think in one of the answers I spoke about this extensively. Achara dharma or the dharma relating to the role that you're supposed to play. The role as a student, the role as a son, the role as a husband, the role as an officer, or whatever it is, each one of these roles are custom made for each person, and these are called achara dharma, or the dharma that has to be practiced at that moment, right? So Swami would say that there could be many, many achara dharma, or individual practical duties, based on the roles that we play. But, when it comes to atma dharma, that can always overrule any of such individual dharmas. And, you know, Swami in his discourses would give the examples of characters like Prahlada, right? Prahlada is supposed to be the son of Hiranyakashipu because he is devoted to Lord Vishnu. The father is not devoted. In fact, the father looks at Vishnu as an enemy. But Swami says that a son should always be obedient to the father. But in this case, when the devotion to the Lord is questioned, you know, that overrules this duty of a son to the father. And Swami would similarly give the example of devotees like Meera, who leaves her husband. She's married to a man and she's worshipping Lord Krishna. She's not accepted in the family. They're all very upset with her for the way she constantly worships Krishna. And Swami would say that how her love for Krishna became her priority and she walks out of that house or she's sent away from the house. And same is the case with Vibhishana, who leaves Ravana, his elder brother. And Swami would give many such cases where individual relationships have a certain duty of obedience or of harmony, but when it's a choice between devotion to God and their role as a son, father, brother, or whatever, Swami says that devotion to God takes precedence. But again, you know, that is always the final result, right? Because if you look at all of these examples that Swami gives of these various characters, again, I'm using all these characters from Indian mythology and Indian culture, and I'm sure that there are such examples in other cultures in the West or in the Far East too. But I'm just using these examples because these are examples that Swami gives. Because if you go back to all of these examples, Prahlada, it was not that he confronted his father right in front. He said, see, this is my belief, I believe in it, I'm devoted to Lord Vishnu, but it was never a case of him being disrespectful of his father. Same is the case with, you know, Mirabai or Sakhubai, Swami would narrate about her. All of these individuals were actually ideal in the role they were playing. But it was just that eventually, since it didn't work out, either they are thrown out of their houses or they walk out eventually. And in a way, you know, that's like the last thing, last resort that is available for us. That till then, I mean, it's very important to remember that it doesn't start with that. That is the last option available. The first option is always negotiation, calmness, to be able to sacrifice a bit. And the last one, if everything is nothing is working, the last option is only confrontation or quitting the place where it happens, right? So coming back to the specific case of marriages where one is a devotee and the other isn't, or like in the case when one does not agree with the approach itself, like the question which was posed to us, as much as possible, we must try to live harmoniously, respecting each other's belief. And as Swami would say, when it comes to worshipping Swami, you know, much of what Swami expects in the form of worship can be done without hurting anybody. Like the example that I gave of the advice that Swami would give to his students. What Swami wants is just that, you know, you think of Swami all the time, you offer whatever you do in your home, in your day-to-day work to Swami, and you lead an ideal life. You lead a life which Swami would say that this is what I want a devotee or a student would like, should live like. And that's what Swami wants, and that actually can be done without hurting anybody around us, right? So from Swami's point of view, definitely Swami does not expect us. But within the family, you know, most often the problem comes when we speak of our approach as superior and the best, right? And the argument starts because most often people want to defend their choices. When you tell me that, I've seen this especially with the conversation that happens between a devotee of Swami and a non-devotee of Swami, the person who does not believe in Swami is attacking your belief because that is the way he's going to defend his non-belief, right? His non-believing in Swami can be defended by attacking your belief, by attacking Swami. He's actually probably has got nothing to do with what Swami is. They would have never, you know, looked deeply into what Swami has done or what is the truth about Swami, but they end up attacking only because that is the only way they can defend their sanity, defend their choices that they've made. So most often, if one of the people involved, and I think being Swami's devotees, it becomes more, the onus is more on us to do that, is when we are able to be a little more calm, a little more accommodative when it comes to this, and not speak in a manner that the other person is unfortunate not to have the same belief. Yes, I mean, this is actually a very difficult thing to do, because when we make choices, we make those choices because we believe in those choices. And to believe in something and not to be, to go overboard talking about it is actually a challenge, and that's where maturity comes in, right? And that is why they say it's someone who is lacking in wisdom who speaks a lot to market the wisdom which is not there. The real wise ones probably never talk because the wisdom is seen even if that person does not express it, right? So in that sense, that's the maturity as Sai devotees that we need to achieve. That there should not be a need for us to put our belief out there in bold letters and say that this is the best. Even if we believe in that, we are definitely supposed to believe in that, but we should not put it forth in that manner. And again, it all depends when you break it down to acts like putting a photo in the altar, and this is, you know, I want to have a picture of Swami next to my bed, or I want to make a visit to Puttaparthi, all of this. You know, it all comes down to how much that particular act means to you. As I said, from Swami's point of view, probably none of these qualify as necessities for having devotion to Swami. But from our point of view, there are some things that we give a lot of value to, that we give a lot of importance to. So it again comes down to, you know, how much that act means to you, how much that act of putting that picture of Swami in your altar means to you. And even among devotees, right, some of us just like to keep our devotion very, very secretive, in the sense, not secretive, but personal. Some of us don't talk about it. Some of us are happy to have a picture of Swami in our phone and look at it every now and then, or probably have it on our desk and not a huge picture on the wall. I know even some of Swami's students would not have, you know, pictures of Swami on the wall, but they would certainly have it in their pocket, or they would have it on their desk. They would say, yeah, this is fine, you know, it's a personal relationship that I have. Again, comes back to the same point that Swami made. It should not come out of the feeling of embarrassment that, oh God, others should not know that I'm a Sai devotee, or others should not know that I go to the temple and I worship. That should not be the cause. But to have a personal relationship with the form that we worship, that is not wrong, right? So it all comes down to our approach, how much that means to us, right? And whenever I explain such topics, I always make it a point to mention this, especially to the youngsters, because it's the youngsters. I've been through that phase. It is we who tend to take very, very simplistic approaches to things, especially when it comes to matters about religion. Always remember this. Swami has come into our lives to make our lives more harmonious. Swami has come into our families to make us lead a more ideal life within the family, within the society, within the workplace. So Swami can never be the cause of disharmony in our life, right? So never pick up Swami's, I want to go for seva, I want to go for bhajans, as a cause for a fight in the family. If you really wish to worship Swami, if you really wish to honor Swami, and the way would be to bring more harmony into your life, to become more accommodative of the people around you. And because we are Swami's devotees, it becomes an onus on us to do all of this rather than to expect it from others. In fact, it reminds me of something which one of my classmates once shared. When he was a youth, he used to be part of the youth wing, and he would every weekend go out for seva and all of that. And his father was a bit upset with this. He said, why aren't you living a normal life? You're going away with friends. And he was not subscribing to this idea that these youngsters are going out and really doing something of value in the name of service. He just thought that, there's some kind of idealistic thing which is going on, and they're probably misusing their time. And this would cause a lot of rift in the family between the father and the son. So one day when this group had come to Parthi, Swami had called them for an interview, and in the interview this boy spoke of this to Swami. He said, Swami, my father is not very accommodative and I always end up fighting with my father. And Swami very calmly told him, see, the problem is not that your father is not accommodative or father is not able to see the point of view. The problem is you've not taken the time to tell him what really you're doing. You've not taken the time to explain to him and help him see the perspective that you are seeing. So then Swami told him, it's very simple. One day when you're going out for seva, why don't you take your father along? Tell your father you come and see what we're doing and then see what happens. And this boy goes back, and that's precisely what they do. The next time when they have a camp, he invites his father. The father comes and sees the work which they're doing, and the father is so thrilled. He comes back and he tells the son that I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud of what you're doing. And, you could be in a mall at this time. You could be watching a movie. You could be hanging out with your friends. But all of you youngsters are coming together and doing something so noble. I'm so very happy for you. And, that's precisely what was missing. Here was a boy who was doing something which was right, but was trying to say that this is something which is right and I don't need to explain this to anybody. And that's where the problem starts. Even when you're right, sometimes probably it's important that you explain it to people around. Because as I said, the whole idea of religion, the whole idea of devotion, the whole idea of Swami coming into our lives is so that we are able to lead our life in a more ideal manner. We become better human beings, which also means that we are able to lead a life more harmoniously with, people around us, right? So, in conclusion, what I'd say is probably coming back to the question that Dr. Danny asked us about his situation where he had this picture, he's not able to put it in his house. Yeah, probably you can sit with her, you say that your marriage has lasted for so many years. Certainly that is not possible if you do not respect each other. So it's a given that both of you value each other. So probably sit her down and tell her that here's a picture that I'd love to keep it in the meditation room that I use. But I certainly don't want to disturb you. I don't want to hurt you in any manner. But I feel that this will help me in my individual journey. Please allow me to do this. And if you feel that it is so very important to you, I think it is not wrong to be a little firm in your thing and to say that, explain to her whatever I told you. And it should work. And as I said, the sequence is, first is acceptance, first is we being more accommodative and we being firm. It's not that we are ready to step back or give up on our beliefs because the people around us don't accept it. At the same time, we are ready to accommodate more. And it's only the final option where we start saying that nothing matters to me more than, me being devoted to Swami or me doing things which will, I believe, take me closer to Swami. So the general rule is, if our beliefs and our paths depends on anything outside, others' approval, others' non-interference, or everything outside should be conducive for me to be able to follow my path, then we still need to grow. That is something we need to understand. It is like saying, you know, I know how to drive a car, but I'm just waiting for all the cars on the road to go away, all the traffic to clear, then I will drive the car. Which only means that you need to up your skill in driving the car, right? It does not mean that you have mastered the art of driving the car. Same is the case. I have a belief, I have a concept of God, I have a methodology in which I approach my worship. If I say that everything around me should be conducive, everybody around me should understand the way I'm looking at things and should help me in this process, only then I will be able to worship Swami. It means that we need to grow. It means that we need to progress, right? If we are able to do what we want to do without hurting anybody around, without banging into any of the cars in the traffic, but still we are able to reach our destination, then it means that we have mastered the art of driving the car, isn't it? And finally, the ending thoughts, it all boils down to how important each one of these things is to us, right? The examples of all the saints that Swami gives that I mentioned, take the name of Prahlada. I mean, we cannot take the example of Prahlada and say that, you know, here was this little kid who disobeyed his father in the name of devotion, so I am entitled to disobey my father in the name of devotion. This character Prahlada, the worship of Lord Vishnu, to chant the name of Lord Vishnu was so important to him that even when thrown into fire, he said, it doesn't matter to me, I will still chant the name. When he was thrown under the feet of an elephant, he said, it doesn't matter to me, I'll still chant the name. That was the amount of priority that he gave to the form of worship that he had. Same is the case with Mirabai. When given a cup of poison, she said, it doesn't matter, to worship Krishna is more important to me even than to live. When you give that sort of priority to the way you worship God, and take the example of even Saint Tyagaraja. I mean, he turned down any amount of wealth which came his way. He said, no, I am writing songs, I am singing only to worship Lord Rama. When your prioritization of the way you worship Swami is so very high that even money and men around you and the fame and the respect people give you and even your own life does not matter, I think when you're in that state, nothing can stop you. Nothing is more important. Your ties with your family, your ties with your friends, none of this is more important than your relationship with God. But the fact is, we're all reaching there. None of us are really there. Some amongst us may be already there, but most of us are only journeying towards that place. So till we get there, our approach to Swami, our devotion to Swami should only make us better human beings and help us to lead a more harmonious life within the marriage, within the family, within the society, and within the nation, right? So I think that is the answer I thought of giving Mr. Danny for that wonderful question. I hope others who are in similar situations would find some value in what I spoke. Mr. Danny, if you have any more clarifications in the answer that I gave you, feel free to write to me at prem@radiosai.org. Alright then, it's time to move to that beautiful poem that we've been going through since the last 2 weeks. I'll be concluding that poem this week. For those of you who missed the last couple of weeks, this is a poem that Swami writes in the Sandeha Nivarani. The Sandeha Nivarani is a very, very interesting book where Swami writes the entire book as a conversation between Swami and a devotee, where Swami himself poses the questions and Swami himself answers them. And every time I refer to the Sandeha Nivarani, I tell this to myself and to the people I speak to, that reading this book will give you an idea of what kind of questions Swami expects that we should ask Swami, right? It's not that Swami physically, even when we think in our own minds, this is the level that Swami expects out of us devotees. So it's a very, very interesting book. If you get a chance, go and read that. In that book, there is this one chapter where Swami says, that I'm going to tell you a burakata or a traditional folk song. Swami says, I'm going to give you this song. And this song is about the plight of the individual or the jivatma. And Swami says, if you listen to the song and if you understand the meaning of the song, you will attain vairagya or detachment from this body. Swami says that when you have that detachment, you will be able to look at higher things and you will be able to understand who you really are. So that's the background of this beautiful, beautiful song. So what I've been doing in the past couple of weeks is I play the song, I pause after every paragraph, and I explain the words. The reason is the Telugu is so beautiful, even if you don't understand it. I don't understand it, but I find it so very sweet. So I'm playing the Telugu as it is narrated by one of our volunteers, and I'm giving you the meaning. So what I'll do, like I did last week, is I'm going to start that whole thing from the beginning, and I'll pause at the paragraph which we ended with last week, and then we'll take it paragraph at a time.
తై 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 బొమ్మ దీని తమాష జోడర మాయబొమ్మ ఖ్యాతిగ దీనికి ముందు వెనక గల కథ వివరింతును వినుజీవ తై 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 బొమ్మ దీని తమాష జోడర మాయబొమ్మ మాతృగర్భమున మలమూత్రముల రోతల నీవు రోదింప ప్రీతిగ వీరలు పేరంటమ్ములు చేతురిదెంతటి చిత్రమురా తై 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 బొమ్మ దీని తమాష జోడర మాయబొమ్మ పుట్టితి మది గోల్పోయితి దుర్గతి పట్టితినని నీవేడవగా పట్టే నవ్వుచు నానందించెద రిట్టి వీరు నీకెవరయ్యా తైతై తైతై తైబొమ్మ దీని తమాష జోడర మాయబొమ్మ మసిలో మట్టిన మలమూత్రములన్ మసలుచు సిగ్గను మాటయ్యలేక పసిపాపడవై పడచూ లేచుచు దినముక నాటక మాడవోకో తైతై తైతై తైబొమ్మ దీని తమాష చోడర మాయబొమ్మ తోడివారలతో కూడియాడుచు వేడుకతో పలు విద్యలు నేర్పుచు చూడచూడగ చోద్యపు కళతో ఏడేడునకు ఎదిగే బొమ్మ తైతై తైతై తైబొమ్మ దీని తమాష జోడర మాయబొమ్మ పతియని సతియని సరసభావమున జతజేరుచు సంసార రంగమున అతి కౌతుకమున నంతకన్ననిక అన్యములేదని అడితిరే తైతై తైతై తైబొమ్మ దీని తమాష జోడర మాయబొమ్మ బొమ్మను బొమ్మను పొందుపరచి పలు బొమ్మలు సేయుర బ్రహ్మయ్య నమ్ముటవన్నీయు నావేయని ధిమ్ధిమ్మని వానితో నాడుదుగా తైతై తైతై తైబొమ్మ దీని తమాష జోడర మాయబొమ్మ ధనము గూర్చునెడ దాచిపెట్టునెడ దాని బెంచనది చనినపుడున్ తనువుతోడనీ మనసుతోడనీ తాండవమెన్నగ తరమౌన తైతై తైతై తైబొమ్మ దీని తమాష చోడర మాయబొమ్మ కామము క్రోధము గట్టికోలగా తామసంబుముకు దాడులుగాగన్ కామినియున్ కనకంబు చేతిలో గంగిరెద్దులై గంతులు వేసి తైతై తైతై తైబొమ్మ దీని తమాష చోడర మాయబొమ్మ సాగుచున్నదని లోగిన వారిని సంకటపెట్టుట సంతసమ ఈగకాలి ఎంతే వికటించిన నీగతి తైతకలే గదా తైతై తైతై తైబొమ్మ దీని తమాష చోడర మాయబొమ్మ ఉరిమి చూచుచును కరములూచుచును వడనిరుగని శివమెందుచును అరచుచు నెగురుచు నందరు నవ్వగ ఆగ్రహమును దయ్యము పట్టిన తైతై తైతై తైబొమ్మ దీని తమాష జోడర మాయబొమ్మ చదువెందులకను సంగతి మరచి ఉదరపూర్తికై ఉరుకులెత్తుచు ఎదుటి గొప్ప సహయింపకేడ్చుచు సతమతమయ్యే చదువుల బొమ్మ తైతై తైతై తైబొమ్మ దీని తమాష చూడర మాయబొమ్మ గుట్టుగ నీ చెడు కోర్కె చెల్లెనని లొట్టలు గొట్టకు రోరన్న చిట్టావ్రాస్తే చిత్రగుప్తు కండ్లెట్టుల గంతలు గట్టుదురా తైతై తైతై తైబొమ్మ దీని తమాష జూడర మాయబొమ్మ అందము ప్రాయము ఇంద్రియశక్తియు ఉందని నిక్కకు రోరన్న ముందున్నదిరా తొందరలోనే ముసలితనమ్మను ముసలకొండువు తైతై తైతై తైబొమ్మ దీని తమాష జోడర మాయబొమ్మ మసలలేవు కను మసకలు మోమున మడతలుబడెతల నెరిసెనుగా ముసలికోతి అని పనివారెలనిన్ ముసిముసినవ్వగ కసరుకొనునేవో తైతై తైతై తైబొమ్మ దీని తమాష చూడర మాయబొమ్మ చచ్చుదాక సంసార చింతలో పుచ్చిన లాభము వచ్చేనా అచ్చటనీయమ యాతనకడ్డము వచ్చేదేదిర పిచ్చయ్య తైతై తైతై తైబొమ్మ దీని తమాష చూడర మాయబొమ్మ బుర్రు మనుచు జీ ఉండను పెట్ట బుట్టబొమ్మను విడిపోగా బిర్రుగా నీల్గిన కర్రబొమ్మ ఇది బర్రున్న బయటికి పట్టిలాగి తైతై తైతై తైబొమ్మ దీని తమాష చూడర మాయబొమ్మ పంచభూత సంభవమవు మేనికి పంచత్వము ప్రాప్తించుగదా వంచితుడై నా దంచు దీనికై వాంచగొంచు దుఃఖించే జీవ తై 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 బొమ్మ దీని తమాష చూడర మాయబొమ్మ. బంధువులందరూ వాకిటిదాకను వల్లకాటికిని ఒత్తురుగా బంధమణచి నిన్ బాయని ఆపద్బాంధువు భగవన్నామమిరా. తై 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 బొమ్మ దీని తమాష చూడర మాయబొమ్మ.
So that's the point where we stopped last week, and just to give you a brief of what Swami had said so far, till this point where we stopped, Swami is talking about the entire life of an individual, starting from the point where Swami is saying that you are swimming in your mother's womb, being lost in that solitude of yours. Then Swami says you are born as a child. The antics the child plays, Swami says that you've forgotten all the wisdom that you actually come with into this world. Then you start relearning everything. And Swami says that everything that you learn, you're so thrilled. You forget that you're the all-knowing one, but you start rejoicing at the every small things that you learn. Then Swami speaks about the adulthood, right? When Swami says you fall in love and you think that there's nothing more sweeter than this in the whole world. Then Swami says you give birth to children, and Swami beautifully says that all of this happens because of the Lord who is making this whole play happen. You're all like puppets and the strings are in the Lord's hand. But Swami beautifully tells that you give birth to a child and you say that this is my son, this is my daughter, and you fill your life with attachment, forgetting like, just like you are a doll, the little doll is also a doll whose strings are in the Lord's hand. And then Swami speaks about the productive years when you're making money. You're forgetting that all of this money is not something which you can carry after your death, but you still waste so much time, earning this money. Then comes to the point of Swami talks about education. Swami says you forget the very purpose of education. You stuff your head with knowledge and you strut about egoistically, which is completely contrary to the idea of education. Then Swami speaks about how what happens when you get angry, what happens when you get sad. And all of that, Swami says, you're forgetting your true nature and you're going through this thing which is actually a long, lifelong joke which is going on. That's what the whole idea is. Swami is saying this whole thing is so funny. And then Swami speaks about what happens with old age, and the vitality is gone and everybody laughs at you. And, you to an extent lose a sense of dignity. You do things which you might have laughed at others when they did, and the energies are ebbing out of this body, and then you suddenly realize that what have you done with life. And then Swami speaks about how when finally death comes calling, you're not prepared for it, and even those whom you gathered around you as your children, as your family, as your near and dear ones, Swami says all of them can only come till the threshold. The threshold is that of life and afterlife. Swami says only till the threshold they all can come. What is the point in you gathering all of these people and all the wealth that you did, which cannot be taken across? So that is the point till where I played that padyam. So we'll go to the next paragraph.
Nammu konaku nityammani dehamu putti munchunadi nattetan tummu nantalo tulipovu nee tommidi torrala tolubomma tai 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 bomma dini tamasha jodara mayabomma.
Swami says here, don't believe that the body is eternal. Now, once you take birth, it is like it's throwing you into this ocean, right into the middle of this ocean. And this is, Swami would make this reference even otherwise, this is a skin doll which is made of 9 holes. That is what this body is at the end of the day. And it can be discarded in the moment that you sneeze, at the time it takes to complete a sneeze. In that moment, this body can be discarded. Don't believe in it, don't follow it.
ఆపదలన్ సౌఖ్యంబులందున ఏపుమేరగా ఏడ్చుచు నవ్వుచు ఆ పరమేశ్వరునానతి మేరకు ఆడే భోగము తాపాబొమ్మ తైతై తైతై తై బొమ్మ దీని తమాష జూడర మాయబొమ్మ.
It is just a doll which laughs when there is success, which cries when there are difficulties, but it doesn't realize that all of these changes are being made by the Lord above, and you are just like the doll which is so listlessly going through life, laughing and crying and feeling happy. And Swami says that's the funny state of this dummy doll.
Dharma karma sutrambulaguni nin tanadimpaga daivambu marma merungaka mayetanduvu madhavu cheti keelubamma taitai taitai taibamma dini tamasha jodara mayabamma.
This dummy doll is being the strings of this dummy doll are being pulled by the Lord himself. And Swami says, what are those strings? The strings are dharma and karma. They are the strings which are used to handle this doll. And Swami says that God makes you play with these rules that he has created, and you are supposed to maneuver through all of this, but not understanding the whole idea that you are only a dummy doll and you are having these strings which are pulled by the Lord, and these are certain things that you're supposed to do. Swami says you look at all of this as Maya and you're losing the whole plot. Realize that you are just puppets in the hands of the Lord.
తరతరమును సుస్థిరమనిపించుచు పరమావస్థల పాలుసేయుచు మరు నిమిషంబిది మరుగుపడునురా పరమాత్ముడు సల్పిన మాయబొమ్మ తైతై తైతై తైబొమ్మ దీని తమాషజోడర మాయబొమ్మ.
When you're going through this experience of life, it appears like it's eternal, as Swami would many times say, that we all lead lives like there is no tomorrow, that we are not going to die at all. So when we are going through this life, it appears like it's eternal, but the fact is it also makes us suffer endlessly. But even as we are suffering, Swami says, the very next moment it can end. And that is the state of this Maya doll that has been made by the Lord himself.
చెట్టై పుట్టై చీమై దోమై చిలుకై కొండ చిలువయనై పుట్టు చుగిట్టు చుకొట్టుకొనుచును గట్టే వెదుకని కర్మజీవ తైతై తైతై తైబొమ్మ దీని తమాష జోడర మాయబొమ్మ.
Swami beautifully in the play of words, he says, you've been a plant, from a plant to an anthill, from an anthill to an ant, from an ant to a mosquito, a parrot, a python. You know, you've been going through all these various forms for numbers of years and numbers of births. And going through these many forms, you're so lost in the cycle. So Swami is saying, your duty is to seek a way out of this. Otherwise you're going to go into this vicious endless cycle and you're never going to be coming out of it unless you seek to come out of it.
Aruduga dorikenu narajanmam bidi aranimusamu vrudha parakura teruvu nerigichani paramatmunigani chirasukhamundara chinta jeeva taitai taitai taibamma dini tamasha jodara mayabamma.
In this paragraph, Swami is saying that this human birth is a very, very rare gift. Don't waste even a moment of this because it's so precious. You know, in the previous paragraph, Swami says, from a plant to an ant to a bird to a python to all of these forms. And Swami would say there are 84 lakh species. And probably we have gone through each of these species and I'm not sure what is the sequence. But if that is the value of this one human birth that we have, Swami says it is so precious. How can you waste even a moment in this precious, precious human life that you've got? Swami says, identify the goal of life when you're going through it. Realize the Lord and attain that everlasting bliss. And Swami says, chinta jiva, or it could mean that, oh, individual who is lost in thoughts, who is lost in worries, this is the only worry that should preoccupy you. What is the purpose of life and how to realize the Lord?
Nee adrushtamuna Sai Krishnude ayakilesundagopadara haayiga satya saayin aatmalo arayuchu ninu neeve erugamura saitai taitai taibamma deeni tamasha joodara mayabamma.
You know, Swami says, because of what fortune you may not know, that you have the darshan of the Lord himself, the puppeteer himself, in the form of this beautiful form of Sai Krishna. Swami says, what else do you need? Blissfully be lost in Satya Sai. And then you will know yourself. You will know why you have come, what you are doing here, where you are going, and how to get where you need to get. Right? Swami says, all that can be achieved if you concentrate on this very, very special blessing within the blessing that you've got of being able to recognize that puppeteer in this form of Sai Krishna. All that you need to do is be lost in this Swami that you have found.
Neetuga matalu koti palkina nee kadupintayu nindadura sootiganaatma jyotini kannane aata vidupu nee kagunayya taitai taitai taibamma deeni tamasha jodara mayabamma.
How many of words you may speak, your stomach is not going to be filled with that. Swami would say this, you know, you need to, it's not talking about dishes which will satisfy your hunger. It is eating that satisfies your hunger. So Swami says, how many ever words that you may speak, your stomach is not going to be filled with it. Light the lamp of the soul, the Atma Jyoti. If you do that, you will be freed from bondage and you will be able to figure out your path. And now comes the last paragraph of this beautiful song.
Vyardhambaguni virri burrakada vinayajnanamu vidumu jeeva sardhaka satyasai burrakadakani prajnanamu lokanaranna taitaitaitaitai bomma dini tamasha jodara maya bomma.
And in conclusion, Swami says, your story is like this silly burrakata. Listen to it keenly and give up your ignorance. On the contrary, listen to the story of Lord Sai, and listening to that with keenness and with joy will lead you to prajnana, or the supreme wisdom. So that, dear listeners, is that beautiful poem that Swami has written as part of the Sandeha Nivarani. And thanks to the Telugu team, they have a beautiful Telugu talking book of the Sandeha Nivarani. This verse, I took it from there, but it's there in the English version. A very crisp translation of that by Professor Kasturi is there. But what a beautiful poem. As Swami said, this is the story that each one of you are living through. And if you are able to recognize this as the foolishness that we are all going through, Swami says, automatically that vairagya will start blossoming within, which is the first step for us to be able to go beyond that. So with much gratitude, I thank Swami for that wonderful, wonderful song that he gave us, and for the opportunity to dive into that song for one more time as part of this program. So that, dear listeners, brings me to the end of this week's Radio Sai Answering Booth. If you have a question and you'd like to send it to me for this program, you can send it to prem@radiosai.org. That's prem@radiosai.org. That's my personal mail ID. So the mails sent to this ID are certainly confidential. If you don't want me to mention your name on the show, you can tell me that. I'll play your question, I'll answer your question, but I'll not mention your name. I'm going to end this program with a beautiful song. Dear listeners, I don't know how many of you recollect, today is the 27th of April, and yesterday some of us were talking in the studio. Yes, we do observe the 24th of April as the Aradhana Mahotsavam. But for many of us, 27th of April was the real day in which we finally accepted the fact that Swami has called it a day. Because till then, we really thought that, you never know, Swami could do anything. So as I conclude this program, I'm going to play for you a song which probably so beautifully captures the emotions that we went through on 27th of April 2011, and that we go through every time we recollect the happenings of that day. So dear listeners, I'll be back with you in about half an hour's time for the afternoon satsang with Arvind. But I'll join you again next week at 11 a.m. for the next episode of Radio Sai Answering Booth.
मन मेरो लागे ना तेरे बिना साई मन मेरो लागे ना तेरे बिना साई दर्शन के प्यासे अखियां तेरे दर्शन की प्यासी जीवन ज्योत जलाओ साई मेरे जीवन ज्योत जलाओ साई मेरे मन में तेरी छवि अति सुंदर केश ये है घुंघराले निराले तेरी छवि अति सुंदर केश ये है घुंघराले निराले नयन कमल मन मोहक मादक रंजित है अधरारे तेरी छवि अति सुंदर केश ये है घुंघराले निराले इस छवि को हम मन में भर कर तेरे गुण को गाए तेरे गुण को गाए मन में रुलागे ना तेरे बिना रे मन में रुलागे ना तेरे बिना तेरे बिना जग माया काए बंधन टूट न पाए तेरे बिना जग माया काए बंधन टूट न पाए जीवन नैया पग पग डोले जीवन मिया पग पग डोले तू ही पार लगाए तेरी शरण में लेके प्रभु तू कृपा शांति बरसाए कृपा शांति बरसाए मन मेरो लागे ना तेरे बिना रे मन मेरो लागे ना तेरे बिना रे तेरे दर्शन की प्यासी अखियां तेरे दर्शन की प्यासी जीवन ज्योत जला साई मेरे जीवन ज्योत जलाओ साई मेरे मन मेरो लागे ना तेरे बिना रे मन मेरो लागे ना तेरे बिना